Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show, March 2nd, 2007, Friday. That's one of those days where I want to shoot the recording devices that I'm using because I got all the way through the show, and at the very end, almost, the power dropped out. These Fostex recorders, which I use, are called file recorders. They're very good for quality, but very temperamental, and they draw a lot of power, so the internal battery packs go out really quick in them. So then you got to rely on the other power, and you never know when the internal one is out until it quits. Tomorrow night, we're going to have Dr. Garber on. He's a homeopath with a celebrity practice. I think you'll find him quite interesting because both I'm also a homeopath. And I think we're going to have some major fun. And we're going to rerun this about 10 minutes of last week to get you up to date because otherwise I find it gets too spaced out on the seminar series. So, because you're getting $200 and some, actually about a $400 tape series on BBS Radio for free if you go to the archives and get this whole thing. We're only halfway through it. And also, of course, the weather. You're noticing the weather down there in Alabama as of today. A lot of people, a lot of casualties. All of these weather patterns are part of the global warming, which we talked about back in 1984 when I did my KFOX. If you go back to the KFOX series, which we recorded earlier on the BBS Radio, reruns of those shows, you'll see everything happening today as predicted in 1984. Unfortunately, the system is unconscious, and nobody wants to listen to the truth. It's the typical problem that we have. But anyway, we're dealing with it, and society likes to work in hindsight. So anyway, here we go. We're starting off with Scott Wu, and then Dr. Fred.
Of course, when these yajñas or sacrifices were stopped, the demigods or a lot of the higher beings from the universe stopped coming to the Earth planet. The flying aerial vehicles had firstly been designated as Raf, which means vehicle or carriage, later becoming known as Vimana or Vimana. It's usually pronounced either way. I've heard it pronounced different ways too, but primarily they're either referred to as the Ratha or the Vimana. Now, when I was in India about a year ago in 1989, I went to a sacred city of Vrindavan, where Krishna actually grew up and had his pastimes on earth, and I talked to some very old holy men there, and this is a very interesting story for those of you who have followed the UFO phenomenon. You may remember the book Chariot of the Gods by von Daniken. That was one of the original books that kind of started the whole search into the UFO phenomena and its mysteries about Krishna and Rama and the Vimanas and all these things. Well, when I first approached these old sadhus, these old saintly people in Vrindavan, I showed them some pictures of UFOs, and they said, oh, and they said, Deva Rath, which means Deva means God, and Rath, as we just described, means vehicle or carriage. So they described these things, and they kind of laughed and said, oh, they come here all the time to the birthplace of Sri Krishna, to feel the energy of the birthplace of Sri Krishna. To them, it was a common thing, seeing these, what they described as Devarath. Now, Devarath, literally translated, means chariot of the gods. So a lot of this information is where the von Daniken theories came out originally and stirred up all this interest. They were described as possessing speed faster than the mind. This aerial vehicle was triangular, large, three-tier, which means three levels, uneven, and was piloted by at least three persons. It had three wheels and were probably withdrawn during aerial flight. In one verse, the chariot is said to have had three columns, and it was generally made of anyone of the three kinds of metals, gold, silver, or iron. But the metal most commonly used was gold, and the Vedic texts describe it as being for the purpose of making the craft look beautiful. Long rivets were attached to it to close off the layers of the craft, and the chariot contained honey or liquid that was served to the beings who would ride on the craft. Possessing speed faster than the mind, it moved like a bird in the sky, soaring towards the sun and the moon, and used to come down to the earth with a great sound. A lot of times in the modern UFO phenomena, we hear about the great sounds that are associated with the spacecraft, and this is also described in the ancient Veda. Now, interestingly enough, for those of you who are perhaps involved in studying ancient medicine and things like these, there is a description here that the chariot had three types of food, liquid fuel, in other words, in three tanks placed above, and in a fourth vessel was filled with soma rasa. Now, soma rasa, believe it or not, is an ancient psychedelic liquid taken from this special plant that is very rare. It grows high in the Himalayas in India. It's practically impossible to find now, but there were ancient rituals with this psychedelic liquid that the yogis would take after practicing austerities for a long time, and they would travel out of their bodies taking this soma rasa. Now, according to Vedas, this soma rasa, this liquid beverage, was available on the Vimana, probably for the purpose of helping the people on it be prepared when the craft would pick up speed or travel through different dimensions to be able to dematerialize their body at a quicker rate. And then in describing the Vimana, we have different astounding descriptions of all the parts of them. Now, it makes you wonder if they had all these Sanskrit names for the different parts and their exact description, what they did. It really lends a lot of credibility to the fact that these objects did exist. One part, I'll just describe a few of them. There's over 50 of them. One part was known as the Visvakriyandarpana, possibly a telescope-like instrument for viewing various actions of the world. The Shakyakarshanayantra, which was a mirror for attracting energy. In other words, it was a mirror-like device that would attract energy, possibly solar-type energy, out of the sky into the Vimana. The Puspini, or Pingila Darpana, which was an instrument for seeing lightning and controlling its effects on the Vimana. The Viduvadashika, which was an apparatus having 12 types of electricity flowing through it. Now, this is something still unknown to modern science. Another object was described as the Patikabraka, which was a sheet of mica-like surface for use in the airplane's internal and external use for attracting solar power, solar energy. And then there was the Apashmara, which was possibly an exhaust-type device placed at the junction of the pipes where the solar energy was being attracted. And then one I think is very interesting is the Stambana Yantra, which was an apparatus for arresting motion like a brake. In other words, these craft, according to Veda, would be flying at rapid speeds and could apply this particular device, known as the Stambana Yantra, and come to immediate halt in the middle of the sky. Now, those of you who have studied the UFO phenomena at all, seen films and different things, there you can see and hear that the UFO, this is performed all the time, where they're traveling very rapidly in all kinds of different motions, and all of a sudden they'll come to immediate stop, stand still right in the sky, hovering, and then take off again. So all I know is that these descriptions in the ancient Vedas are quite astounding, because they describe a lot of these things that were in the Vedas that are being observed now in the modern UFO phenomenon. Now consider this, if you will. Bombay, September 21st, 1952, an article appeared in the newspaper that described that an aeroplane based on the sutras of the Vimanaka Sastra of Maharishi Bhardwaj, the manuscript of which was recently discovered by the director of the International Academy of Sanskrit Research, that there was a Vimana that was actually flown in Bombay during 1890. This information is contained in a research article in this week's issue of the Vivitrata, a leading Maharasi daily paper in Bombay. Now, the article was written under the contribution of Sri Lalubhai Kansara, who was a studying of the Vimanas for quite some time, and he discovered that in 1890, a man named Sri Talpade first constructed a model of an aircraft in the lines laid down by the Vimanaka Sastra. The model was exhibited in an exhibition arranged by the Bombay Art Society in the 1890s. Following his success, Mr. Talpade constructed a bigger aeroplane with the help of his wife, who was also a great Sanskrit scholar. He was also assisted by a friend and an architect from the Bombay School of Art. Now, what he had done was constructed this plane based on the descriptions of the Marutsaka and the Pushpa type of Vimanas, which were part of the Vedic knowledge. The general idea of the plane can be found in the 20th Adhyaya of the Rig Veda. That was where the general description was given. I've described to you some of those parts that were in there. Now, the plane, when it was complete, was shown to the late Justice Mahadeo Ranande, and he took him and demonstrated the actual movement of the craft to him, and he became so impressed, this chief justice, this judge, that he thought he should invite European experts to proceed further. But Mr. Talpade did not agree to that because he thought it would be a sign of inferiority on their part and that the Vedic knowledge was sufficient for them to construct it. But apparently the plane made its first and probably its last flight in 1985 in Shupati. Apparently this craft was later flown, like I said, according to this, in 1985. And the first flight was witnessed amongst a throng of persons, you know, over 100 years later. Almost 100 years later. And this is quite astounding because the plane ascended to a distance of 1,500 feet before coming down. And it says that it was equipped with automatic devices for lowering down when it reached a certain height. So after the death of his wife in 1917, Mr. Talpade had lost all interest. And later his relatives sold all of the different pieces and everything after this demonstration in the modern age. And it's just one of those passing events that came and went, but it was actually demonstrated, and this is documented evidence in India of the actual flying of a Vimana. So what we've done now, this will conclude our section on the ancient Vedas, the Vimana, the path of Narasimha Yoga, and the neural life illumination. What we've described to you on this tape, first of all, of course, and most important, is your personal entrance into this study of neural life illumination. Feeling the presence of the light, the spirit soul within your body and emanating out through the neurological system. This will be the primary importance in understanding your existence as ecstasy and living your life in this full blissfulness in your higher awareness centers of ecstasy in your body as Satchit Ananda Jiva. We've also described some of the verses from the ancient Srimad Bhagavatam and the Vedas for the purpose of describing the ancient telepathic process and now the modern form of speaking this sound vibration to you. You know, friends, keep in mind that when you hear this tape, I want this tape to be yours. I want you to take it personally and see it as something valuable for you. When the sound of my voice goes through the microphone and reaches our ears, what happens is it goes through the canal, fluid is vibrated in the ear, and that vibration of the fluid gives a signal of a certain sound to the brain. This process is going on right now. And the ancient Veda was always based on sound vibration, and after it came from the form of telepathic communication, the first entered in the sound vibration. So this sound vibration that is coming through this tape to you, may this sound vibration purify your mind and your hearts and allow you to live in complete ecstasy. On the previous section, I've given you some ideas about our living condition as ecstasy. On this section of the tape, I want to talk to you about the environment. And I don't mean here just the environment in terms of reforestation, air pollution, and things like these, which of course are very important and urgent, but something a little different, something a little more personal that involves your day-to-day existence. The environment is the key to harmony, ecstasy, and higher consciousness. First of all, there's something that's very important for me to know that you understand clearly. I told you recently on our last session that we have limited sense perception. And the reason it's important to get this clear in ourselves is because it opens the door to unlimited thinking. Now, you may wonder how, because a lot of times we hear different tape series and positive motivation seminars about becoming unlimited and thinking unlimited and expanding your thinking, and I completely agree with that. In fact, that's what we want to promote on this series here. But by recognizing your limits, you transcend them. Remember that now. By recognizing your limits, you transcend them. Well, how is that? Because by pretending to think you're unlimited, without deep inside of yourself really clearly first understanding your natural limits, you will only be able to go so far, because those natural limits will come back to challenge you later as you attempt to see yourself as an unlimited thinker. So first, by identifying our limits, we can develop our genuine, unlimited intergalactic consciousness. Science has proven that inside of the atom is swirling energy, which ultimately forms atoms. They have not yet figured out how the energy goes from being non-physical energy to physical form, the atoms. Albert Einstein once was asked to give his definition of matter, and he said, "Matter is merely energy in a form that we can perceive by our senses." So I have a saying in regards to our living environment, and I'd like you to think about it real carefully. In fact, it has to deal with our electrical environment, the environment that is around us, in which we create our thoughts and our own reality in. Now, I have this posted on my walls because I always want to remind myself this, because it is a moment-to-moment living reality for ourselves. So I'll say it slowly. You may also want to put it on your place where you can read it on a daily basis. Here we go. What we feel, see, hear, and project through our neurological system outwards towards the present projected environment is the living condition of our reality. Now let me read that again. What we feel, see, hear, and project through our neurological system outwards towards the present projected environment is the living condition of our reality. Our living condition is the immediate environment, and our whole existence is created by the energetic thought forms projected out each moment into it. This statement, when you read it, you get this feeling that, hey, if it's really real for me, if I'm really experiencing higher consciousness in my relationship to understanding the UFO phenomena and different metaphysical type thoughts, you will find in the moment-to-moment existence that what you feel, what you see, what you hear, and ultimately what you are projecting outwards from this realization, which is held in your mind and your heart, outward through your neurological system, in other words, what you're projecting out through your nervous system towards the current, right now, the projected environment that is sitting in front of you, that means the people you meet, the work you do at your job, the relationship you have with your family, your kids, all the people that you're close with, your relationship even with yourself when you're alone, the relationship you have with everything you do, relationship you have with driving in your car if somebody cuts you off, the relationship you have when you go in to get some gas or you go into the grocery, everything, what you feel, see, hear, and project through your nervous system outwards towards the present projected environment, whatever it may be, good or bad, that is the living condition of your reality. It's not something else that you imagine yourself to be or wish you were, but it's exactly what you're projecting out right at this time. So take this idea, realize that our living condition is our immediate environment, and that our whole existence is created by the energetic thought forms that are projected out each moment into it. And this will make things very exciting and very clear for you. You can check yourself on this. I'm now just beginning to embark on a national tour to promote our Citizens for Scientific Reality campaign. I feel that when people discover the UFO phenomena and all of our limited concepts of thought and science, government, politics, religion, and education, when these are all challenged, I believe there will be a tremendous movement towards some of the thoughts and ideas shared here with you on this tape series. And I believe that there will be a revolution in the total thought process. And you can see it going on in our world today. Something is about to radically change. So as I go out on this tour, I hope to be entering your homes through the television and the radio. And I hope to see you at some of our seminars. And I would really look forward to sharing this whole existence with you. And I hope to meet you personally someday.
This is Dr. Bell taking the helm again, back from Scott Wolf. And I'm sure you had fun, as I did, listening to that part of the tape series. And as if you're watching and listening to the progression of this tape series, I'm sure that you're noticing that it's getting a little bit deeper and a little heavier all the time, a little bit more information, because this is not only something for you to listen to, it actually unlocks consciousness as it goes along by keying into certain sound mantras and timbres, which is what our music is all about, so that you can actually have an experience. When we get further into the tape series, some of the music is quite acceptable to use with our systems. But now what I want to do is I want to talk about time and vibration. What happens is, if you look at human beings, they change. They're not to their sensitivities to what goes on over a period of time to different kinds of energies, both dimensional and interdimensional. For example, the Earth and the Moon have a rotational period together. And this particular period happens to be a 30-day cycle as the Moon goes around the Earth. When it goes around the Earth over a 30-day cycle, what happens is we have tide changes, we have changes in consciousness, the circadian rhythm, we have the 28-day cycle, 33-day cycle, and we also have the 30-day cycle. So we have a 28, 30, and a 33-day cycle. The Moon moves around the Earth at 2,300 miles per hour. And as the Moon rotates around the Earth, it causes serotonin changes in the human being. For example, during a full moon, the serotonin levels have a tendency to be higher in the human brain and throughout the human body, and a non-spiritual entity will have a tendency to behave differently than a more spiritual entity, because he's more tied into the whims of his physical body and less to the whims of his spiritual body. So what this means then is that if your chakras aren't tuned in to the moon changes, the sun, solar changes, and all the other changes, you're very susceptible to go upside down in a positive energy point, which is what the bulk of humanity does, which, as we talked about earlier in the aura field presentation, the aura fields are going upside down in people. Now, as we rotate the Earth and the Moon, as it goes through its cyclic changes, the Earth and the Moon also rotates around the Sun every 365 and a quarter days. That's why we have a leap year every 4 years. During its rotation around the Sun, the Earth goes through a Earth change that would be construed as summer, winter, spring, and fall in the both north and south latitudes, each being the opposite. There is a vibratory frequency within the Earth itself that's representative of the Christ energy, which we'll talk about more later on. And as this energy moves about
from the north and the south pole and vacillates, it sets up a spiritual frequency within the earth, like a pulse or a heartbeat. During the winter months, remember we talked about the Anu earlier, which is in the vitality globule, during the winter months we have a situation whereby the natural death rate is at the highest, and during the wee hours of the winter months, and during the summer, death rates drop at a natural level, because another kind of vitality is there. When we have the cycle of the winter, the Christ energy is in the ground, and during the summertime, it's in the air, if you want to look at it on simpler terms. Now, when it's in the ground during the wintertime in the northern hemisphere, what happens is the trees sense this, a lot of other things sense this, and they go down into the ground where the sap and gain the energy of the Christ consciousness from the earth and charge off of this energy field. Then as the spring comes, the sap moves back up into the trees and plants, and the leaves open to the solar energies, and the Christ consciousness prevails more on the surface. And, of course, during this time, the seed is produced. And if you remember, when it falls off the flowers and off the different trees in this fall, the seed then goes back in the earth and is vitalized through the winter by the Christ consciousness. The seed, by the way, in any form of food, contains the highest amount of energy in any food substance. It's always wrapped up in the seed, which gets a charge from underneath the ground. Now, as the earth and the moon and the sun rotate around the Pleiades, we go into a larger cycle, a much larger cycle of energy. And this cycle is 25,827.5 years. In this great cycle of 25,827.5 years, we have a subcycle. Divided by 12, we have 2,152.3 years. And so that roughly what we're saying here is during the subcycle, we have changes just like the earth and the moon had caused changes in the body over a 30-day period. And the earth, moon, and the sun caused changes in the body over a 365-day period. So do we have changes in the earth, sun, moon over a 25,827.5 year period, or the precession of the equinox. There's an old temple in Egypt, in the old spiritual city of Dendora, along the Nile River, and this is called the Temple of Hathor. It's dedicated to the goddess of love and the stars of Hathor, the Pleiades. In this temple, a marvel of man's beginning can be found. An eons-old carving on the ceiling, intricate in design, a star clock, first carved in the early B.C., celebrates the Pleiades, the vastly greater sun around which our solar system revolves, taking 25,827.5 years to complete the revolution. Called the precession of the equinoxes, this clock of stone survived the ages. Now, when we look at this cycle, we realize that 2,152.3 year subcycles, these cycles are called ages. Piscean age we're coming out of, Clarion age we're going into. Coming out of the Piscean age, we are coming out of an age where the spiritual beliefs of people was, I believe. They believe. But in order to have a belief system, they had to have an idealism. And so this was the birthplace of religion. The level of soul changes during these 2,000-year periods, and there's 12 levels of soul that enters into our cycle at different periods of time on the precession of equinox, and the level of soul consciousness that entered into the soul during the rotation of the sun and earth around the Pleiades during the Piscean or Christ times was the believer. And because the believer needed a system of belief, all the different religions were structured during that time. Of course, there are older religious structures that intertwine through these younger religions. I would say Christianity had its birth 2,000 years ago, Catholicism, and all the other types of religions bounding around that had their birth in that time. Before that, of course, the Jewish faith was much older, and beyond that, the oldest surviving faith, which is the Brahmin faith of Tibet. But looking back during all these different times, the strongest period of the belief system was the last 2,000 years, and we had to have the believers. Now, when you look into the Aquarian age, which we're going into now, the level of the soul that's born now is a higher of consciousness, and it's the knower. These people don't have to have a religion to stand on, to stand upright in this world, and they don't have to have a 5 or 6 set version of the Global 2000 report to realize the planet's in trouble. They know by looking around and feeling and sensing. And as a result of that, the knowers, which are called the Age of the Aquarian type consciousness, will move ahead, forge ahead, stand alone if they have to, and change the face of this earth. And if you notice that your children are always smarter than you are, and their children are smarter than them, those of you that are grandparents and great-grandparents out there, and I'm sure a few great-grandparents are out there and will hear this tape and the sound of my voice. When you realize that this evolution is taking place, then you begin to realize that naturally further into the knowers are going to be the extraterrestrial souls. And I'll get into more about the extraterrestrial souls later on, because I don't want to jump into too many subjects at once at this point in time. But anyway, going back to our cycle of going from Pisces to the Aquarius vibration, the chakras in the body change, the vibratory frequency and sensitivities of the bodies change. There are many different changes. People are much more susceptible to sound, for example, now than they were 2,000 years ago as a whole populace. Naturally, there are many masters that are impregnated within the bowels of the human race that survive these cycles because they're transcendental in nature, meaning that they have moved beyond this planetary, stellar, lunar ramification and feelings and spiritual consciousness awareness. Now, looking into the cycle a little bit more, if you break it down, if you take the 2,587.5 years and divide that by 52, which corresponds to 1 year cycle of the Earth, you come up with 496 years. 496 years, if you study the Shinto in Japan, which claims to have vimanas and saucers like Scott had elaborated earlier on, as the Indians did, and Japan was the center of civilization up until through the Atlantean times until about 5,000 years ago when China broke off, and for some reason they became a smaller civilization as a world power. But you can see they're fast coming back again. But anyway, the Shinto master is said to be born every 496 years approximately over in Japan. This is one of their high spiritual leaders, much like the Dalai Lama, who takes a centurial reincarnation cycle in Tibet. If you break that down even further by 52, you end up with 9.5 years, or one decade. And you can see that one decade, a 10-year cycle, falls in the greater cycle, and you always see changes in a 10-year period. Look at how we were in the 60s. Look how we were in the 50s. Look where we were at in the 40s. 40s to the 50s to the 60s. Compare the 60s to the 40s. The 70s, the 80s, compare the 80s to the 60s, and now the 90s. You begin to see other cycles. The Hopi Indians, for example, saw this Pleiadian cycle, and they have their major ceremonies divided into 52-year periods. Now, the Great Pyramid, of course, is riddled with the Pleiadian mystery, as you would say it. It's 7 mystical chambers. Of course, these suggest the 7 levels of consciousness, which we're going to experience in a little while, as soon as a few more chakras have been opened by the sounds and energies coming from this tape series. And we also noticed that if you took the rotationary period of the Earth, which was 12,827.5 years, and took 2 times the base diagonals of the Great Pyramid, you would end up with half that period of time, which is 12,913.75 pyramidical inches. So if we could put 1 pyramid inch per year and went around the entire base of the pyramid, you come up with the exact frequency or count of 25,827.5 years, the great age of the cycle of the precession of the equinoxes.
This seminar series is continued.
We'll get this puppy rolling right away. I'll get as much of this in today for you as we can, because I know this is the good stuff. I love talking about the Great Pyramid. It's really amazing. You've heard me talk about it in bits and pieces, but this is the whole big picture where I really did cover it. So anyhow, we'll fire this puppy back up and get her going real quick here. And I hear Dr. Bell walking back in. He just went out and washed his hands, basically. Here he comes back. He washed them in the ocean, though. Then he took a ride in the Pleiadian ship, as you can hear in the background.
And now, continuing here on the next tape, if you take the carbon atom and realize its relationship with the Great Pyramid and its geometric proportion being the same, only smaller, and remember that shape and size, as long as the shape is related mathematically by pi and phi, which we talked about earlier, realize that the Great Pyramid and the carbon atom are going to resonate together. What are they going to resonate to, you might ask? Very simple. The relationship to the carbon atoms in the Earth, which realize the Earth is carbon-based, as are we, as are the pyramid, and the entire structure of the Earth, the carbon atom, and the Great Pyramid are going to resonate to their location and position in space and time. And so it just happens that at this point in space and time, we are going into the Aquarian Age, which is the doorway to the fourth dimension. Now, a lot of us are Piscean-tuned. We have the Aquarian awareness, but we don't have the consciousness yet. And one of the purposes of the Paradigm product line and the things that I do and some of the other New Age people do is to enlighten consciousness by a means of technology as did the ancients long time before us. A lot of people say, well, I could just get into a spaceship, fly away, that would be fine, I realize it's a technology, but why just can't I go home and sit down in a chair and make my body into a spaceship and fly away? Well, some people can do that. Most of us can't, including a lot of extraterrestrials who rely on external means of transportation. But at the same time, there's a thing called acclimation. If your body is not used to or ready for this great change, and you jump into an extraterrestrial spaceship, you're able to come back after your voyage quite disoriented. And if you come back disoriented, like a lot of contactees have and a lot of abductees have, it's hard to readjust to this life back here on Earth. And a lot of people go crazy, like in the Benny and Barney Hill example, for example. Betty survived the ordeal, but Barney didn't. He had ulcers before it happened, and he died a few years later after the experience. He never did adjust to it. And it's a positive experience sometimes, even though they were picked up by the civilization called the Greys did not severely mistreat them at that time. They just sort of indoctrinated them into the ways of what they were about. When I worked in the NASA facilities and I worked with Rockwell, I was working adjacent to a program of space medicine, and space medicine was a program whereby the astronauts were conditioned to go into space. A lot of the astronauts had trouble, for example, staying in their bodies because they were highly powered athletes, and 99% of your energy is overcoming gravity on every single day, and when you put yourself out in space for 2 weeks with not a bit of gravity, and you have a powerful athletic body, as does an astronaut, your energy's got to go somewhere, your consciousness got to go somewhere, and unless you're severely, anchored into your physical body, as they were not, most of them, you're going to have an out-of-body experience. And even if you don't have an out-of-body experience, you're going to have a higher vision of a higher susceptibility to seeing extraterrestrial vehicles in space, more so than if you were not in space. I'm sure a lot of times you've heard of people looking up in the air and some people seeing a spaceship or an extraterrestrial device or a UFO, and others can't see it, and they're all looking at the same direction at the same point in time. It's because consciousness is not sensitive yet, sensitized yet. Give you an example. Right now, in the room that you're sitting in listening to this tape, I want you to look around the room and look at everything in the room that's brown. Take a couple of seconds here and look around, see all the brown things that you see in the room. Now I want you to close your eyes, take a deep breath, like that, and say, wait, I want to remember all the things I saw that are green. Now remember that, or blue. Now try to remember all of those things. Now open your eyes up, look around, and suddenly things that are green and blue you have a sensitivity to. It's the same thing with what I'm talking about now, getting ready to get ready for this higher space consciousness, which is important for all of us to realize. I'm sure most people out there would like to have some kind of a spiritual experience. Some of you want to become contactees. Some of you probably want to make a big trip. Some of you want to maybe build a spaceship. Some of you want to use this technology for healing purposes. I'm sure there's 1,000 different uses that people have and motivations to listen to this kind of material that we're presenting now and to go through this experience. This material is unique, as I've said before, in the fact that the music, for example, that we've used up to the point that Scott Wolf came back on was what you would normally hear in a tape series. In a better tape series, would probably have something that would be subliminal. Then when Scott came on, for example, we started bringing in the sitar and other instruments that are more powerful, with more timbre, and we brought the consciousness up to another level. And now we're coming into the next phase of it, which is the sound phase and the meditation phase. We're going to bring the level of consciousness up still even further. And the reason we're doing this is because at this very moment, we're moving at 1,000 miles an hour along the surface of the Earth versus the air, and we're moving at several thousands of miles an hour through the sun around the Pleiades. And the Pleiades, of course, is moving with the Milky Way, and the Milky Way is moving with something else. So you have this grand scale of motion going on continuously with many different concurring cycles. And what we're going to do by the end of this tape series is be tuned in to this series of cycles. We've had to open the chakras up from the very hard pragmatics, for example, but grounding that was necessary in the beginning of the tape series, where we talked in depth about the great government cover-ups and the aliens, good and bad aliens, and all these kinds of things, which the ego had to hear those things to really to relate to where we are now. Where we are now is only the beginning of where we're going to go. That's the fun of holographic sound. And holographic sound in itself, people say, well, what is that? I said, well, the Andromedans are teaching me holographic sound. Oh, is that some form of new microphone? No, you can use any microphone with holographic sound, because what holographic sound is all about is triggering one series of events to another series of events by the timbre and not the chord. But the chord, of course, has to go first. You might say that in the beginning, so far, we were playing chords like chords on a piano. But pretty soon we went further than the chords on a piano, and we went into the sitar. And pretty soon we're going to go into the Pleiadian ship. Now, that isn't to say that I haven't laced this entire tape with the sounds of Pleiadian ships, because we have. And that's a lot of fun to listen to them. But as you hear the Pleiadian ship more and more and more times through this tape series, you're going to detect more and more deeper things in the consciousness of hearing the sound of the ship. As we go into sound, we go into the meditation, you're going to feel more and more and more. And pretty soon you're going to hear that sound of that Pleiadian ship, and it's going to be second nature to you. It's not any longer going to be, oh, what was that? Like when you first heard it with the wave sounds in the very beginning of the series. You're going to start identifying with it. You're going to start feeling something from it. And when you start doing that, automatically you're going to connect subconsciously and consciously to the Pleiadian vibratory frequency. This is going to draw you more towards the society of Pleiadians, because your aura field is going to start opening up to it, blockages are going to be removed, these kinds of things happen. Then when we get into the systems and you start applying things like our Fire Star Aura, along with special design tapes and sounds that go with these kinds of devices, what happens is you're going to be really launching yourself out. Just about every single individual that has installed a Firestar Orb, for example, has had some kind of an extraterrestrial experience, whether it be a sighting or a direct contact. And I can't think of one that hasn't been installed somewhere in the world that somebody has not had a major spiritual experience from. I give all this credit to the Pleiadians and the higher forms. I take no credit. I was just taking directions from a Pleiadian cosmonaut, religiously trying to understand what she told me to construct this type of device. But now, getting back into the sound, we're going to have to, first of all, go over and listen to a piano. Now, I'm playing an A chord now, down to an A minor. And when we play something like an A chord, we're talking to a chakra in the body, just a straight chord. Now, the piano doesn't have the timbre element in it, as does, say, a sitar or a Pleiadian spaceship or something that sounds similar to a Pleiadian spaceship, developed from the same harmonic context. So if you look at the body, starting with the head and go all the way down to the base of the spine, what you'll find is a series of chakras. or energy points. Now, on the receptor, we talked about tuning up for a gemstone, say a ruby for the pituitary or an emerald for the throat, or a sapphire for the heart. Imagine what would happen if you were to add the proper sound to the receptor, so that you would wear your receptor, for example, which is tuned to a particular chakra vibration. At the same time, you would hear a sound. Now, when we talk about hearing a sound, if you play A, for example, which is the A again, the A tunes into the pineal gland in the body, or the area of the highest head chakra within the body. Now, you can get up into the crown chakra, something else, but we're talking about the seven basic notes, A, B, C, D, E, G, F, E. And what happens is, with these basic seven notes, we're going to get different responses. If we go down into the next power level, or the next energy field, which is the note B, which would sound something a little bit different than A, it goes down a little bit further into the body than does the note A. It's a little bit different sound. And then if we go down into C, we're getting a little bit more down into the throat. And so on down the whole spectrum of the body. This is something interesting to note. Now I'm going back to the piano again for a moment. And remember, the very first part of this tape series, up to the time that Scott Wolf came on the second time, we were using, here's for example, an F. Or some note beyond that. The basic sound is fun, and you can take a piano and play it as Mozart did and get some very, very strong sounds and some very moving medleys out of it, but it takes a lot of work. Now, the next thing that happened was we got into the era of electronic music, and the first changes in electronic music allowed us to take the piano and add a little bit of timbre to it. Now, it wasn't the answer, but now look what happens when we play an A chord with a little bit of timbre on it. It's a little bit moving, it's a little bit deeper, and I don't have to increase the tempo of the note progressions and chord changes to bring out some kind of a sound to get some mood going. Just the sound itself makes the mood. And then what happens is, if you go beyond the mood of just the sound itself and start actually playing the piano, what happens is then, with this kind of a power, with a little bit of melody, you start getting a hearing it and feeling it, and it becomes a whole other synopsis. Then we can go into some of the other synthesizer piano settings, for example, the bell and string combination, where we add the violin. Starts to take on even another dimension. Now you say, well, whatever happened to the old trumpet sound? Trumpets and instruments like that, because I'm a clarinet player, and I have a lot of respect for these instruments. As a matter of fact, I'll never give up clarinet playing. I'm starting to play it again. As a matter of fact, I'm in the process of looking for a new clarinet now. I started playing in the sixth grade. That's what finally got me into music. And to hear sounds like that, and maybe two trumpets together, it's quite gorgeous. But the trumpet, once again, it's a sounding instrument. Remember, they played cornets and bugles going into battle, for example, these kinds of things. And as a result of that, it's a simple instrument, but when tied to a whole lot of other instruments, it gives a good feeling. But today's times, this is wonderful, and I'm not putting this down, being a I also play guitar. Being an orthodox instrument player, it's wonderful. But still, there's something about the Pleiadian ship sound that just never ceases to amaze me and causes me to really want to have more and more and more of that energy around me. So as a result of that, we've gotten into the laboratories, and I'm sure a lot of you have heard our albums, and you probably like, well, most people seem to like the sounds. Now, sometimes when you first hear our music, it's a little different, and it's a little bit hard to adjust to, meaning that it's different, and you say you sort of like it, but you're not sure. You're not quite sure what kind of music it is. You've never heard it before. Well, that's fine, because you have blockages. And if you hear the music a little bit more and a little bit more, especially the Fellowship album, that's a good, what I would call, icebreaker for this type of sound. Once you listen to the Fellowship album two or three times, it becomes habit-forming. And it's not a bad habit in the fact that it clears you out and it relaxes you and gets rid of different kinds of stress. I remember when my dear friend Steve Halpern first came out with the Frantic Alternative music. For that particular time, it was the very beginning of New Age. And New Age music is still finding its way into the hearts of many people, and a lot of people are turning to New Age now because the stuff that you hear on the radio every day really doesn't take you anywhere. It's repetitive. It sounds good in bars, and I suppose it works good on drugs, but on a normal person that's trying to excel in something, the music today on the radio, is, you know, for the broadest part, sounds terrible. And that's why a lot of the top 10 overall nationwide sounds are the older bands that are coming back into to focus again, because they had a stronger message. Look at the Moody Blues, for example. The band that I toured with for a long time as a friend, they have a tremendously powerful sound even now. And this type of music that we're introducing is like when Roy Orbison started, or Willie Nelson started. They all had a new style of music. Even Elvis had a new style of music. And for a long time, for the first 3 or 4 years, people couldn't make sure whether they really liked it or not, but when they finally decided they liked it, it had staying power. Whereas a lot of this new music that you hear today instantly goes on, gets a lot of promotion, people hear it a lot, it sells because people are hearing it, there's nothing else to buy, and then finally when the reality of what the real musical message is sinks in, it goes right off the charts. The record companies today are dearly struggling because they don't understand what they're doing anymore, because they concentrated on money and profits and they forgot about consciousness. And today people are seeking consciousness, and that's why this music is so full of consciousness. And this is what I have learned from the Pleiadians, and that's why we use their sound techniques a lot in all of our music. Even the rock and roll album that we're currently working on now, which will probably be coming out soon after this tape series is out, called Freedom, uses this concept. And this music, by the way, we don't consider our music to be New Age. We consider our music to be four-dimensional. We play concerts live a lot of times, the band Voyager. And I might explain and talk briefly about Voyager. Voyager is a band made up of different members of other bands that you've heard of. We've got members of the Yes Band working with us. We've got members from the Grateful Dead working with us. We've got different people from different large groups, small groups. What we're looking for primarily is talent. And each band member from a larger band that comes in to help out Voyager, which is kind of a band that's there to put consciousness together, makes a contribution for that particular album. So we might have one musician from one band on one album and another musician from another band on another album, because it's not about getting out the album. It's about bringing in an individual artist and letting him explore his talents to the fullest. When the artist can explore his talents to the fullest, then he can realize his potential. And if you look at the music scene now and successful music, a lot of bands are doing that. A lot of different major, like Phil Collins, he does a lot of solo things. He does things with his band. And you look at Paul McCartney, he has a band. He does things solo, does things with other people. The Traveling Wilburys is another example of a bunch of very talented musicians that have gotten together to express a mutual energy, a mutual feeling. So music is finally starting to get real, and these are the kinds of sounds and bands and combinations that will survive. Now I want to do is get into timbre a little bit, and I'm going to pick a sound here that's very close to the sound of a Pleiadian ship as far as timbre goes. Now the instrument I'm about to use here is a Roland D50 linear arithmetic synthesizer. Because it's so rich in timbre, or it has the capability of being rich in timbre, not all the sounds it makes are rich in timbre, it makes it an ideal device to use to work on chakra opening and transcendental meditation techniques that we use in mass audiences. Whenever we go out and play concerts in our seminars, live concerts, if I'm just playing a solo concert and I only bring one synthesizer, you can bet this is the one that I will bring, because it has the most power for this particular aspect of what we're doing. Now, there are other synthesizers in front of me that all have aspects, but this has what you would call the root vibration or the root energy field in it. And from this part of the tape series on, you're going to hear this synthesizer and this sound a lot. Now, when we did analysis of Pleiadian ships, we found, with a spectrum analyzer, we found that there was a 1,000-cycle main frequency and several subcycles underneath it. Some of the cycles that we found in there were cycles of the musical notes, especially lots of G's and D's, which we'll get into in a minute, and also a very large frequency of timbre frequencies that extended down into the blood pressure or blood circulatory frequencies, the heart frequencies, and the frequencies that we found in the Pleiadian ships were harmonious to the human body, oftentimes a bit intense, however, to the uneducated body, meaning that they had to have their chakras blown out or destroyed before they could understand the sounds. That's why we're trying to gradually unwind the negativity and disharmony in your chakra system with this tape series and allow you to be able to stand the tremendous power of the Pleiadian ship. Because when you reach it towards the speed of light, the energy field goes up, the size of the density goes down, the concentration goes up, and the material density, of course, goes down with the concentration goes up in energy. And what happens is you pop over to the next dimension, the next plane, and the atoms in the body have to be able to do that, especially the hydrogen atom. So anyway, now we're going to take a look at this heavier sound here, and this might be a familiar sound. And I'm going to move this sound around a little bit as I play it. And the sound, by the way, was one sound. You won't be able to find the sound anywhere because it's a sound that I created with a special use of a Atari computer and a system of matching up the different parameters of the ship versus the parameters of the synthesizer. And it takes literally hundreds of hours, even with the proper computer setup, to do and create these sounds. And I create these sounds. Once I have the basic sound, then I can build actual families or banks off these sounds, which I've done. And that's when I'll start using multiple synthesizers here in a minute to show you what happens when we start stacking these sounds, all with fourth dimensional timbre characteristics. Here's the basic sound now. Went up the scale a little bit, going up the chakras. I just stayed in the D and G, so we're just kind of going into the solar plexus of the body. If you remember what I told you about earlier, the A being the top of the body and the G note being at the bottom of the body. So we're playing around with the base of the spine, which is a logical place to play around at this point in time with this kind of an experiment, because we're just introducing you now to these kinds of sounds. Now, when I talk about A being at the top of the head and G at the base of the spine, I don't want you to think this is happening all the time. Realize that sound has to enter somewhere in the body. I mean, the sound just isn't hovering down there and just jumps on the body. It doesn't work that way. It goes in through the cells first, cells grouped in the frequency of G at the base of the spine. Through these cells, naturally, if you go back, it has to go into the molecules. If it goes into the molecules, it has to go into the atoms. And if it goes into the atoms, we have to look at the four basic atoms that we're addressing with this sound. Yes, believe it or not, an atom is sensitive to sound. It doesn't have to be your ear or what you feel. It's actually the atom itself. So what happens is, in the case of the atoms we're looking at, we're talking about the hydrogen atom. The hydrogen atom is the most sensitive to sound. The music of the spheres. Remember I talked about it earlier in the tape. The hydrogen atom, through the enzyme action, when the enzyme is close to the right frequency of the body and vibratory rhythm, what happens is the hydrogen atom allows the energy to enter the body. The body, of course, receives the energy as the motation and rotation and frequency of motion and rotation of the hydrogen atom. In the morning, as you remember, when the sun comes up, I said that the energy coming from the astral plane, going down into the hydrogen atom, enters through the center of the hydrogen atom, and the first part of the, look at it, like a rainbow there. And this rainbow then goes down to the nucleus of the hydrogen atom, and the other end of the rainbow, which should be violet, goes out to the electron, the outer parametering revolving particle, because the hydrogen atom is nothing more than a proton and an electron. And so this rainbow energy is just animating this. And the color of the center frequency of the rainbow is green. And later on, when we go into the meditation, we're going to go actually into the hydrogen atom and have the experience. But right now, we're just feeling it. We're breaking you in slowly so that when we do the meditation, and that meditation, you can use it long after this tape series has been listened to in its complexities and its completeness. You can always go back to certain tapes and use them over and over and over again with your system if you want, or to share with your friends. So now what we're going to do is we're going to vibrate the hydrogen atom in the body. Now realize that as the sun moves in the sky or the earth rotates, the hydrogen atom is changing polarity. That means that the music is changing its polarity. Remember I said it, you know, in the sunset, when the sun goes down now, the violet part of the energy field, the light that's animating the hydrogen atom, is going to be towards the nucleus, the proton, and the red energy is going to be out the electron. It's made a 180-degree phase change. The only thing that's changed consistent is green, which, of course, is nature. Nature is a green energy field, or the thought process. The thought process rotates 180 degrees. That's why you think differently in the morning than you do at the middle of the night. And that's why if you move from L.A. to Germany in 10 minutes or 2 or 3 hours, it takes you a long time to adjust to the climatic change, the geometric climatic change, because the hydrogen atom has to repolarize, and this is called, of course, jet lag.